Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Doing AI, a business-centric examination of AI culture, goals, and values by Richard Hyman, narrated by Derek Scholes. Publisher's note: in this audio edition, you will hear references to illustrations, figures, images, and tables present in the print and ebook formats of this book. Foreword. I've known Rich for nearly half my professional life. We met when I was a newly minted chief technology officer at a Fortune 500 organization, and he was an up-and-coming data scientist, arriving at the company as a result of an acquisition. In those days, our collaboration usually went something like this. I'd ask Rich how quickly he could get something done, and Rich would then ask me why we were doing something in the first place. Our CEO and board wanted to know how we were going to monetize AI-based solutions. Reasonable. And after all, didn't all those executives and industry analysts already define for us what problems we should solve? So why slow down and retread back into problem definition on a constant basis? What I didn't know at the time was how clueless I really was about how best to apply different facets of artificial intelligence, AI, to different problems. As a fast-rising entrepreneur and technology executive, my success up to that point was predicated on creating matches between engineering projects, solutions, and business needs, problems. And it was always in that order. What solution did we have, and what problem could we solve with it? And I was exactly wrong. Time and time again, the question of what and why would lead us in new directions. Taking principles from design thinking and agile product development, paired with deep expertise in data and AI, we could start to piece together the how. We'd uncover blind spots and biases that our customers would not only take an interest in, but would reward us for uncovering. For them, operating at scale meant that papering over a tiny flaw or accepting less than specific and measurable benefits from our work could result in millions, if not billions, in wasted spend, ruin careers, and potentially send companies and industry leaders spiraling toward oblivion. For those projects that had global stability implications, the stakes were even higher. Over the past 10 years, Rich has shifted my thinking, and the results have been unexpectedly profound. Today, I lead arguably the best collection of CTOs at one of the world's largest and most important AI technology companies, and the lessons that Rich taught me come into play on a daily basis. They inform me in our cross-functional teams in sales, engineering, product management, and marketing, and they help our customers through nuanced endeavors, where the heat of solutions is always tempting us away from truly understanding problems. Many of Rich's lessons underpin the successes my customers, my teams, and I have had applying AI in the real world. We have a saying in my current organization's engineering function that the first rule of machine learning is that you don't need machine learning. It's a bit tongue-in-cheek, but it's a nod to the importance of problem-solving. This mantra also speaks to the importance of pushing problem-solvers back to the problem itself, rather than solution-centric thinking that, at best, only partially solves partial needs. In this book, you'll get the same coaching I've received from Rich, while also reaping the benefit of the refinement and precision only possible through many years of trial and error. I can't think of a more important time to redouble our collective efforts on solving pressing, specific real-world problems. And though AI will play an important role in every industry and society at large, it's not because AI is magic. It's because innovators like you will seek out the world's most pressing problems and start with the what and why. Will Granis, Founder and Managing Director, Office of the CTO, Google. Introduction. Fall in love with the problem, not the solution. Uri Levine. The CEO of Alphabet, Sundar Pichai, wrote that in the next 10 years, humanity will shift to a world that is AI first. Pichai says AI first means computing becomes universally available, be it at home, at work, in the car, or on the go, and interacting with these solutions becomes much more natural, intuitive, and, above all, intelligent. Pichai undoubtedly has considerable intuition into how AI can provide more information users need, when and where they need it. In his book, Onward, How Starbucks Fought for Its Life Without Losing Its Soul, former CEO of Starbucks Howard Schultz writes how Starbucks evolved millions of people's relationships with coffee from what they drank to where and when they drank it. Similarly, the shift from what information customers need to when and where they need it has been a key to Google's success, enabled by solutions like Google Pixel, Google Home, Google Translate, and Google Search. Google has important competitive advantages, with more information to draw from to provide more information users need, when and where they need it, but many of us may be puzzled by what it means to be AI first. In fact, it is not always clear what is meant by AI. We interpret AI first as though we ought to literally become solution first without knowing why. What's more is that we conceptualize an abstract, idealized solution that we place before problems and customers without fully considering whether it is wise to do so, whether the hype is true, or how solution centricity impacts our business. For example, I've seen firsthand business-minded people try to define artificial intelligence, thereby needlessly and inversely creating external goals for problem-solving. I've seen business-minded people debate and contemplate if some arbitrary solution was real enough to be considered AI. However, your solution does not need external goals not granted to it by the problem it solves in order to be real. This is a type of concept creep where we expand our conceptualization of a solution to include things it does not have, or demand things of our solutions they do not need for problem solving. As founder and managing director at the office of the CTO at Google, Will Grannis has told me, being AI first really means doing AI last. To me, this makes sense, because anytime we set out to do something, we always have to do something else first. After all, if being AI first literally means solution first, then we lack problem-specific information required to even know anything about the right solution. We will also lack customer or market-relevant direction and will fail to align strategy with the business. To craft a relevant strategy, a business should construct those statements as problem, customer, or market-focused, not solution-focused. Ultimately, solution-focused AI strategies are too abstract to be useful for most of us. After all, how do you evaluate a solution that cannot be measured positively against your problem, customer, and business? The business of a solution is not a business until after it has been evaluated positively against a problem. That is, a solution is not real because it has a name that includes intelligence. A solution is only a solution after it solves a problem. Problems are only real problems when they have been evaluated positively by a customer, thereby aligning with a business. A problem is only a business problem if it has been shown to be important to a customer. Rarely is something as abstract as intelligence important to business, because it is rarely important to customers. Successful ventures start with a problem and a group of people who are unwilling or unable to solve that problem and therefore exist as potential customers. Consequently, businesses need to focus on solving problems and ultimately finding consumers within the context of problems, not within the context of solutions. We must reject the notion that we can find consumers within the context of a solution without a problem. Besides, every company is a technology company, and every company is a software company. Companies, both large and small, will have access to an arbitrary amount of data and at least some artificial intelligence or similar technology. The comprehensive understanding of problems is a competitive advantage, if not the biggest, and maybe only advantage. To be sure, solutions have never been better, largely because of technologies like machine learning, ML. In addition to being better, solutions have never been more accessible, facilitated by open source projects. But solutions are never just one thing. Rather, they are numerous, varied, imperfect, and certainly have not replaced problems or rendered problem solving obsolete. Although we should generally seek better solutions, our collective goal is to evaluate better in terms of problem solving, with problem-specific information and progress toward a business goal, not some abstract value of intelligence or vague goal of artificial intelligence. Understanding such complicated technology in order to create the right alignment requires four things. 1. A realistic conceptualization of artificial intelligence, which is too often hyped as artificial minds on an exponential path to outthinking humans. 2. Confidence spanning boundaries that comes from identifying the goals and challenges of others, but not mistaking their goals and challenges for your own goals and challenges. 3. Goal alignment, which we must understand will not come from scholarly-minded insiders who think goals originate from the study of intelligence, but rather from problems and customers. 4. The ability to obtain critical business context that often cannot be found in solutions alone. This book seeks to resolve the persistent problem of aligning so-called artificial intelligence with business by recognizing and distilling conflicting cultures, goals, and values. Focus will be on the prominent social boundary on the edge of scholarly regimes, or groups of insiders, as well as on practitioners, or groups of outsiders, where we find different groups talking about their goals through the lens of their culture and values. Specifically, we will thread a small needle and explore solutions for what they are and what they are not, what others want AI to become, why talking about an AI solution is often unlike that very solution, and, ultimately, we will explore what businesses need solutions to be. Part 1. Understanding AI. Chapter 1. So, what is AI? Seeing AI through a business lens. By far the greatest danger of artificial intelligence is that people conclude too early that they understand it. Eliezer Yudkowsky. So, what is AI? And what should it mean to you as a business person? Given AI's importance and its perceived implications to harm or do good, understanding what it is before we seek to do it seems, on its face, important, if not necessary. For example, in the introduction of their modern classic, Artificial Intelligence, A Modern Approach, authors Stuart Russell and Peter Norvig write, in which we try to explain why we consider artificial intelligence to be a subject most worthy of study, and in which we try to decide what exactly it is, this being a good thing to decide before embarking. Thus, we will explore what is behind this estimable question. We will ask what exactly AI is, to whom it matters most, if there is any special significance of the name AI in and of itself, and how to best conceptualize AI from a business stance. First, however, we must understand that there are those who do not want you to know exactly what AI is. David Slocum, a professor at the Berlin School of Creative Leadership, writes of consultants, cheap celebrities, and commentators who have emerged because of, and to exploit, the proliferation of information and the concurrent destabilization of standards for that information. What Slocum means is that there are negative side effects associated with taking shortcuts, such as listening to the wrong people, which cost us more over time. As Yogi Berra famously said, if you don't know where you're going, you'll end up somewhere else. For example, consider how commentators and peevish pundits will claim an algorithm is too dangerous to release, or general intelligence is already here, or give a false, broad sense that so-called real AI is just around the corner. Too often we depend on others to direct our attention. Stay tuned, we are told, and we often do. We're fooled by those who willfully manipulate, and we fall into the buzzword trap, which prevents us from having the required explicit knowledge to operationalize nebulous concepts. Ultimately, we must not exalt literary experts, who are rarely artificial intelligence experts or even practicing business people, as they are safe from any responsibility. We should not glorify theorists, who may often be artificial intelligence experts, but fear any responsibility of implementation and often ignore economic benefit, as well as ethical and security issues, for epistemological pursuits. We cannot extol the pseudoscientific writers who talk about what they wish solutions to be rather than what they are. Ultimately, what you require is not compatible with these groups, their goals and values, or their lack of values. Good management starts with identifying conflicting goals and successfully spanning boundaries. Spanning boundaries. Business-centric thinkers and doers need to be boundary spanners, identifying the goals and challenges of others, but not mistaking their goals and challenges for your own goals and challenges. Boundary spanners are adept at bilingual translation and the ability to interpret solutions for what they are, not what someone else wants them to be. Boundary spanners solve the right problems, comprehend and communicate value propositions clearly to customers, and connect everything to the business. If you want to be an effective boundary spanner, you do not need to be both a scholar and a business person. You just need to understand that you are not, and often cannot be both. It's important to acknowledge that AI originated within the regime of insiders. Regimes create and support their own lexical features to describe their efforts and their goals. In other words, names like AI are useful for internal communication among insiders. As a business leader, you are not a part of the insider regime, but instead an outsider. You are not seeking to help AI reach its fullest potential, but operationalizing how a solution, any solution, can help business success. The hazard of adopting someone else's name occurs when the name is superficially understood, merely memorized, and casually adopted. To effectively use someone else's name, we must understand what the name represents. The Nobel Prize-winning physicist Richard Feynman articulates the difference between knowing the name of something and learning it well. "See that bird?" Feynman said. "It's a brown-throated thrush, but in Germany it's called Halsenvogel, and in Chinese they call it Chungling. And even if you know all those names for it, you still know nothing about the bird. You only know something about people and what they call the bird." Feynman is saying that understanding begins with a strong command of names. We must explore names and learn what they are meant to represent and to whom. As author and entrepreneur Seth Godin says, "Memorizing anything that you'll need to build upon is foolish and will never yield the results you seek from them." AI pioneer Marvin Minsky calls these capacious names suitcase words, which are words that contain a variety of meanings. In day-to-day life, suitcase words simplify communication that may prevent us from being distracted by unnecessary detail. Yet due to their usefulness and compact representations, suitcase words lead to overuse. AI is a prime example. It is mainly meant to communicate complex, often amorphous, concepts to others who also understand the same complex topics. It is a shortcut for the few to talk with the few, but creates friction for everyone else. The safest thing to do is simply avoid someone else's name for their work, or at the minimum, recognize what values and goals they stand for. L.J. Rittenhouse, author of Investing Between the Lines, lays out her time-tested approach for recognizing at-risk businesses before trouble hits. Rittenhouse coaches corporate teams to identify blind spots and create stakeholder communication and action strategies. The Rittenhouse rankings have shown that CEOs with rich vocabularies gain competitive advantages by being more alert to business opportunities and business dangers. Coding executive communications allows the Rittenhouse rankings to find business leaders who explain complex ideas simply, balance strategic actions with vision and aspirations, and engage audiences with empathy and straight talk. In other words, vocabulary mastery shapes perceptions, which in turn impacts company performance. To be sure, these high-ranking CEOs are boundary spanners. Leaders who rank high on the Rittenhouse rankings care about finding the right word, not just any word. Leaders who rank low don't. As Mark Twain famously observed, "The difference between the right word and the almost right word is like the difference between lightning and a lightning bug." If you use jargon to tell it like it is, but you don't know what it is, or the listener doesn't understand what it is, then you are actually saying that you don't know what it is, or you don't want someone else to know what it is. Let us avoid the circuitous journey and together find the right word, the right goals, and the right values. The fallacy of definitions. First and foremost, what does everyone mean when they say AI? If there are rules to defining AI, few seem to know exactly what they are. In fact, so many definitions exist that defining AI seems to be an area of research in and of itself. The lack of universality of what AI is certainly reflects a fragmented field of study, where different uses of the same term may seriously undermine goal attainment. This is perhaps because the name itself dares us to compare ourselves with computers and vice versa. David Watson at the University of Oxford says that it is hard to tell whether AI is meant to be taken literally or metaphorically. Oddly enough, the lack of agreement stems from the seemingly intuitive combination of the words artificial and intelligence. This seemingly prosaic act of taking two words that seem self-evident alone, and even sound commonsensical when put together, vastly more so than economic terms like collateralized debt obligation, proves to be double-binding and sucks adjacent ideas and images into its orbit and spaghettifies them. Part of the complication is that combining these two words is meant to invoke a new word that is deceptively powerful and allows various interpretations. Consequently, one has to wonder how differently we would think about our technology if AI pioneers Alan Newell and Herbert Simon had won support for the significantly less hype-prone term complex information processing rather than artificial intelligence, which was ultimately adopted by the field. Newell and Simon were the only two participants at the time of the Dartmouth workshop, considered to be the founding event for artificial intelligence as a field, who had actually developed a rudimentary thinking machine. Perhaps they understood how tricky intelligence would prove to be to define and to solve. To be sure, intelligence has proved to become a sort of undercurrent that takes a seemingly noble interpretation and hijacks it. How intelligence must be solved provides another undercurrent that exists just below the surface. Like all undercurrents, they can lead us from shore and prevent us from ever making our way back. Let's consider a definition of artificial intelligence as intelligence exhibited by machines. This definition can be found on Wikipedia and exists in many similar forms. Therefore, the definition is quite common, yet still pernicious. It's pernicious in the sense that this definition does not describe an area of research. Rather, it attempts to describe the solution insiders seek to create. However, in that pursuit, the definition is purely analytic and barely rises above tautology, as the definition does not define intelligence. In fact, the definition does nothing to outline the nature of intelligence or the type of solutions we wish to call intelligent. It merely redefines intelligence as something a machine does and then points back to intelligence. Moreover, intelligence exhibited by machines will never serve as a goal for insiders, as it is a form of confirmation bias that is focused exclusively on positive outcomes of what a computer can do, and then calling that intelligence. AI cannot be defined in such a broad way, as the definition effectively makes all future research on artificial intelligence unnecessary. More aptly, AI may be defined as machines that exhibit intelligence, where the goal is intelligence, not simply calling what a machine does intelligence. Yet even this definition doesn't make clear what intelligence is, let alone why intelligence as a goal is desirable or even required. A more authoritative source is an oft-cited paper by researchers Shane Legg and Marcus Hutter. Legg and Hutter, both a part of Google DeepMind, begin their exploration by acknowledging that no general survey of definitions of intelligence have been published, which must reflect the lack of maturity in a field centrally interested in intelligence. Legg and Hutter's initial goal was merely to collate formal and informal definitions of intelligence. Compiling a definitive account would be challenging because many meanings are buried deep within articles and books. However, Legg and Hutter found 70-odd definitions, perhaps the largest and most well-referenced collection of definitions on intelligence. One of the complicating factors for defining artificial intelligence using an assortment of literary and dictionary definitions of intelligence that predate the field of artificial intelligence, as Legg and Hutter have done, is a discussion heavily weighted toward human intelligence. That is because most all definitions of intelligence that predate artificial intelligence center on a discussion of human intelligence. Thus, by using natural intelligence as a standard, other types of solutions and intelligence are neglected because the goal isn't intelligence in a general sense, but intelligence in a specific human sense. Although there is no better kind of intelligence than human intelligence, this form of anthropocentrism creates a high, tortured standard because the goal isn't material, but rather idealized. Consider that science fiction writer Robert Heinlein's Competent Man is sometimes seen as the archetype for insiders. Heinlein notes that a human being should be able to change a diaper, plan an invasion, butcher a hog, con a ship, design a building, write a sonnet, balance accounts, build a wall, set a bone, comfort the dying, take orders, give orders, cooperate, act alone, solve equations, analyze a new problem, pitch manure, program a computer, cook a tasty meal, fight efficiently, die gallantly. Heinlein adds, specialization is for insects. The fact that most of us can't do half of these things Heinlein considers human competence is perhaps why inspiration for artificial intelligence often comes from science fiction. This exaggerated anthropomorphic viewpoint, however, is a high standard for almost all applied problem solving. After all, businesses need to solve problems even if those solutions are as specialized as an insect's. Consider what a corresponding solution would need to do. Such a solution would have to deal with incomplete and contradictory information, learn from a single example, learn in real time, accumulate and adapt knowledge to new problems, learn autonomously, comprehend its environment by conceptualizing and understanding the real world, and do all of this with reasonable amounts of computation. Ultimately, Legg and Hutter settled on the following definition for artificial intelligence. The goal of machine intelligence is an autonomous, goal-seeking system for which intelligence measures an agent's ability to achieve goals in a wide range of environments. Similar to other definitions, this definition explains artificial intelligence by sidestepping the whole thorny topic of intelligence, merely restating intelligence as a measure of an agent's ability to achieve goals in a wide range of environments. It turns out that collating 70-odd definitions of intelligence leaves us with very little information about intelligence. Or perhaps it highlights that there is nothing more to know about it. The most practical definition of artificial intelligence was produced by one of its founders, John McCarthy. It is the science and engineering of making intelligent machines, especially intelligent computer programs. McCarthy's definition, like so many others, avoids explaining what intelligence is or why it is important. Instead, McCarthy's definition describes an area of research, perhaps in an effort to learn more about intelligence. That said, the definition highlights an important point already made, which is that AI is not a technology. AI is an area of research meant to be an aspirational goal for someone else, and in a strict sense, not something you will build because it can't be, or at least hasn't been, built. Undoubtedly, intelligence is a red herring of sorts for the field, because whatever it is, and insiders have not been able to define it so far, it is a multidimensional thing. Intelligence is not a single thing, on a single dimension, easily defined in one pithy, conclusive definition. Therefore, attempts at defining intelligence are lacking and generally adhere to the standards of the researcher and how they want a solution to be judged, not by some unified theory of intelligence or, more cynically, even what the solution claims to do. Because intelligence is too complicated to be defined, insiders include intelligence as a placeholder until they can learn what it is. Although ruminating on intelligence is certainly a strength of the field, its vague and slippery nature makes it difficult for anyone to find much agreement on anything. Consequently, nearly all definitions of AI prove to be obscure, ambiguous, too broad, or too narrow. Ultimately, the value, especially for business, of such definitions is less than the effort that goes into acquiring them. Definitions of artificial intelligence invariably fall into the fallacy of definitions. That is, definitions fail to have merit when they are insufficiently precise. More importantly, names like AI fail to serve business when they are obscure, ambiguous, circular, too broad, or too narrow. Business strategy is too broad when it includes things that it shouldn't, like intelligence. Business strategy is too narrow when it fails to include things that it should, like mentioning an actual problem or a real-world customer. Circular strategies are those in which a goal is defined by a solution, and that solution is defined by the goal. However, you are unlikely to find a customer inside of an abstract solution. Therefore, Solutions cannot be your goal, and when they are, your strategies are more complex. The former chief data officer at Abe.ai, Francesco Gadaleta, recently explored.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?